Welcome back to The Head Game, episode number 58. Alec DeReese is here with us. He's a YouTube content creator, also known as Cyrid. He has over 200,000 subscribers on YouTube, as well as he is a competitive Fortnite gamer for his college. We get into the mindset, the head game that he plays, what content creation versus competitiveness looks like, and a little bit off of Docs Off the Clock, pressing the buttons of Alec and seeing what he thinks in those moments. Sit back, relax, grab some popcorn, and enjoy. All
right. So 1 million views. How's that feel? Oh, I just like the way that sounds.
It's pretty incredible. I mean, I've been making videos for almost 8 years now, maybe more. I don't even know anymore. And it's my first video to hit 1 million views. The one before that, my next biggest one was 400,000 views, which is a lot, but it's over double, and it's still growing. It's at like 1.2, maybe 1.3 at this point. It's a surreal feeling that I feel like my hard work has finally paid off, and it's starting to all come together.
So if someone pulled you aside, say, I don't know, a year ago, and tapped you on the shoulder and said, hey, psst, yo, you're going to get 1 million views, what would you have said?
I don't want to sound arrogant or cocky, but
go ahead, sound
off. I would have believed him.
It's the head game, man. It's okay.
Yeah. I would have believed him.
Let us peer in.
Yeah, I mean,
so you had the mindset that you were going to hit that million.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, since I've been doing this since middle school, I mean, my content back then wasn't that great. I wasn't too proud of it, but I knew that it's what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And I've always tried to improve my content throughout the years. And I never really had a doubt that eventually it would come together, and it was just a matter of time. And it seems like the time is now.
Yeah, what'd you start with? You're talking about your content kind of back in the day. Like, when did you start everything and, being on YouTube? And
yeah, so I started in middle school. I'm a senior in college now, so that's a long time ago. Eight years now, I guess. And I mean, I was still making Minecraft videos, so it was the same genre, but I didn't have the experience. I didn't really know how I wanted to conduct myself in these videos. I also didn't have the gear that I needed to make like high quality videos. So right. It was sort of just progression over the years of developing not only myself, but also, you know, the hardware that I used in making the videos.
Yeah. So what's that journey like to go from nothing, like not even a channel, to now 200,000 plus subscribers?
Yeah.
The silver play button.
Yeah, we got 100,000 here.
Gold to come soon.
That was hit.
So 100,000 is silver?
Yes.
And then
when you get 1 million, it's the thing. It's platinum. The same thing, a little bit bigger, and then it's gold.
Gold.
And if you hit 10 million, then it's platinum.
Platinum, like the records.
I suppose, yeah.
I think that's
like
the
records.
I think it's the progression. What are those? Come on, man.
Big CDs.
Yeah. Big CDs. Really, really big CDs.
Yeah. No, but the journey's been great. It's certainly been a journey, that's for sure. I started when I would make my first videos, it would be in my bed when my family was not home, because I didn't want them to know. They didn't know I had a YouTube channel for 2-3 years before I told them.
Why
about
is
it.
That? Why did you keep that all to yourself?
Because it was embarrassing, to be honest.
Why?
To make Minecraft videos. I don't know. I mean, even still, when I tell people today, I'm more confident about it. I'm more happy to tell people, but it's never something that I'm like, I mean, I don't want to say I'm not proud of it, because I am, but it's just like.
So that's interesting. It's something that you were conflicted about.
The stigma around.
There's a big stigma around trying to become a YouTuber, and specifically a Minecraft YouTuber, because it's just like, it's cringy almost. I mean, I don't think so, but a lot of people think so. It's almost like I've known a lot of people that have tried to become rappers or like do something crazy with their lives, and I'm like, there's no way like you're gonna do that, because there's so many people that try, and it's like you just
right.
It's almost like you're trying to be famous, and it's like you, like people look at that and they're like,
you don't want to be cast as that dreamer.
I suppose,
or,
yeah.
Or, you know, the one that's unrealistic about their future, because everyone else is trying to do it.
Sounds
a little bit like being an actor.
Yes. It's something that a lot of...
What do you want to do? I want to act.
Yeah,
sure you do. You're going to be a bartender or a waiter. That's what you're going to do.
Yeah. It's almost a profession that a lot of people want to do, but laugh at when people try to do it.
Hmm. It's exploding now, right? More and more people are going to try are trying to get into that world.
It's definitely becoming a lot more normalized. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. But when I started it, it was like people would think I'm a weirdo for it. That's why I didn't tell them. No one in my school knew. No, like throughout high school, people found out like junior year after I had, I don't know, like 50,000 subscribers because my friends told them, like my close friends, and then word spread, et cetera, et cetera. But it was never really something that I was really open about. And still today, I'm not really. Like, I tell some, you know, some people that I'm comfortable with, but I don't really tell, like, many new people that I meet. Like, hey, I have a YouTube channel that I make Minecraft videos because, I don't know.
So that's a nice springboard into if you're still of that persona, you know, and what is it about who you are when you're doing your work that's uniquely different from who you are as an everyday person?
Like I said earlier, when I was sort of developing myself in these videos, there is a much different persona when there's a camera in front of me versus like now when I'm relaxed, just, you know, having a conversation with people, because you need to make sure that your videos are entertaining. You can't make a video that's just like a very monotone, boring, not super fun video, and expect it to do well.
Right.
Especially in the Minecraft market, most of the viewers are younger.
Right.
And so if you just sit in front of a Minecraft game and play it monotone, not do anything too special or exciting, or flashy, you know, those kids like to see cuts here and there. Animation here.
So is this the secret sauce? What gets you really kind of gets that engagement from that audience?
So it's actually kind of interesting because for my whole career, I've always tried to improve on making my videos really fast paced and making them really exciting every second of the video, because that is what like the biggest and most successful Minecraft YouTubers have done.
Right.
Recently, there's been a trend that is basically you spend 100 days in Minecraft.
So explain that a little bit.
Yeah, what is that?
So the way it works is you spend 100 Minecraft days in Minecraft. Right. The Minecraft day is a lot shorter than a real day. So I'm not actually spending 100 days, like real days, playing Minecraft. It's just 100 Minecraft days, which equates to around 33 hours of gameplay. So what you do is you record 33 hours of your experience playing Minecraft, and then after it's all recorded, you go into your editing software and chop it up for, I mean, depending on how long you want. Mine's normally around 40 to 45 minutes of that 33 hours. So it's a lot of condensing. It's
a lot of footage.
It's a lot of condensing. Of work. Yeah, I mean, it takes a long, long time. And then you have to do like the voiceover of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And right. So normally all the voiceover, all that stuff is done on the spot. It's commentary live on the spot of what's going on. But this is a little bit different. And it's a lot more laid back, which is something that I found like weird that it did so well. This is my video, by the way, that hit 1 million views. And it's so different to any of my other videos. It's a lot more relaxed.
Right.
I wouldn't say it's monotone, but it's a lot more like just chill than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm like conflicted as to should I upload my videos that are really rambunctious and loud and fun, or should I stay on like the more like slow end? That
what are the people telling you? What's the feedback? What's the overall consensus? You know, are you getting that type of feedback as to, you know, the flavor, about how you do it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely getting a crazy amount of support. This month, I've gotten over 65,000 subscribers, and I'm at 200K. So that's a huge chunk of my 8 years done in a month.
So just like that, the trend.
It's got to be one video. Like a cumulative effect, though.
Yeah.
Yes, it's one video, but it's a cumulative effect of really the history of your work.
Yeah.
As I'm sitting here kind of listening to you explain. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's the thing is like, I don't know if I should continue, like, because those videos take a while to make, takes days and days and days. Last time I uploaded was 4 days ago. I used to upload every single day because it was easier to make those previous videos. It took like 3-4 hours to make a video typically. And now it takes 50.
Right.
So I'm just not sure if I should go back to those old videos, but I got a ridiculous amount of support. All the comments on those videos are do another one. Please do another one. Please. We're waiting.
So that was my next question. Do you feel any pressure now to kind of, if you talked about the laid backness of it, but is there a pressure now to kind of put out the next one or to go back to something that you're more familiar with? Like, what's that like?
I feel like there should be a lot of pressure, but I don't feel pressured at all. I think it's because I've been doing it for so long and I'm really confident that I can continue to produce those videos that, you know, all these new fans are waiting for. So I'm not really pressured. I'm not even feeling rushed either. I feel like a lot of people would be like, oh my God, I have to make another one right now. I have to do it right now. And maybe I should feel that way, but I'm not even like sulking it in. I'm not like, oh my God, like my channel is going crazy. Now I'm going to relax. It's more of, I don't even know how to explain it. It's just like something that I've seen coming for so long. And now that it is, it's like, here we are.
You talked about when we were kind of off air and we were talking about some of the people you like do YouTube with.
Yeah.
Like, what's that like between doing an individual video versus like collaborating with other people?
It's definitely a lot more fun. Recording by yourself is sometimes can get, I don't want to say boring, but when you do it day after day after day and
you're owner talking of a lonely heart.
Exactly.
Anybody? Anybody?
He no. just waits to sing at least once an episode.
Got it.
At least once.
Was that on one of your records?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was. Okay. But you wouldn't remember. It was before you were born.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
That's okay. But you sounded a little lonely there when you said that.
Yeah, I mean, it can be lonely the recording solo by act. Yourself, for yeah. sure. I mean, recording those videos that take 50 hours to make total is
what did you learn about yourself in creating something like that? Alone versus now starting to collaborate with other people. Yeah, clearly it's more fun, but sometimes there's that, you know, window that we get to peer into when we're, you know, solo.
Well, it's interesting because one of my best friends, who's been my roommate, or I guess my housemate, for the past 4 years now, has almost 3 million subscribers on YouTube, and I make videos with him all the time, or at least I used to. It's been like 2 weeks, so it's not like we broke up. But I was making videos with him for years.
We were on a break.
I know. And yet I have made solo videos here and there throughout those years, of course. But I've actually seen more success in my solo videos than with a YouTuber who has 3 million subscribers, which is interesting. And I thought about it a lot. I was like, how is that possible? How? Because we're uploading very similar videos and his are getting hundreds of thousands, if not millions of views. Mine are not. And I was thinking about it and I was like, why are my solo videos doing better than when I have this huge YouTuber
right.
in my video? It didn't make sense to me for a while, but then I thought about it and in most of those videos, like 95%+ of those videos, he would be in charge of what's going on in the video. He would be the one that plans out the video and knows exactly what we're going to do throughout the whole video. And it would be more of me, I don't want to say following him around. I was more like the comedic side of the video while he would be the one that gets everything done. And I thought about it from a viewer's perspective. Who would you want to watch? Would you want to watch the guy that does everything? And then like there's a funny guy in the background that's, I don't want to say making the video because I'm not. He's also very funny. But would you rather watch the guy in charge that's really doing everything? Or would you watch
the guy... There's a gravitation to the guy who's like leading the group.
It's like Batman versus Robin. Yeah. If they both had YouTube channels, you would watch Batman, not Robin.
Who wants to be Robin?
Exactly.
I mean, come on.
Yeah. But if Robin made his own videos, then it might be a little more interesting.
Might be a little bit better.
There you go. Right, yeah. And so that's something that I found. Like, making videos with them is really fun and really enjoyable. But if you're not the one that is leading the video, if you're not the one that's in charge of what's going on, then people are less likely to watch that.
Yeah.
So you're talking about leading, and I know we've worked in the past together about kind of streaming versus like competitive play. Mm-hmm. And you've talked about leading teams as well in competitive play. So talk to us a little bit about your competitive play experience as well.
So this is like very different from YouTube.
Yeah.
It's almost like a different side of YouTube.
Making a hard left turn.
I guess. Like YouTube is a lot more fun. Don't get me wrong. It is competitive. I'm competing against thousands and thousands and thousands of other people who are trying to make the very similar
like
content.
A billion minutes. Like a
but it's a different kind of competition though, right?
It is very different competition.
Yeah.
But I guess it's different because I don't even, I mean, yes, it's competition is competition no matter which way you look at it, but I play Fortnite competitively and I don't take it too seriously. It's more of a hobby, but when I do play, it's like something that I take pride in. I play for my college, and I suppose my role is more of a mediator slash leader. My job is to you know kill other people in the game and mm-hmm. and do that, but it's also to make sure that my teammates keep a clear mindset and understand what the actual objectives are, which is first and foremost to win the game more so than get eliminations throughout the game. So
kind of explain that like progression of a game, because there's different phases to the game and you're talking about setting them up. Obviously the goal and objective is to win.
Yeah.
But what's that progression look like for you, right? Or for your teammates as well?
Do you mean like each individual game?
Just, is it different game to game?
Well, so a tournament is 10 games.
Okay.
And you accumulate points each game based on how many eliminations you get and what place you come in each game.
Mm-hmm.
So by the end, you have a certain amount of points that's added up throughout those 10 games.
Right. So if you play game one, you get like, let's say 10 points, but the next game you could get like 2.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. And it adds up.
Yep.
Okay.
But I mean, it is really easy to get down on yourself. Like mm-hmm. if you die right away, if you join a game, you die right away and you're like, we just got 0 points. We just wasted an entire game when we could have gotten 50 points that game. We got 0. And it's really hard to keep a good mindset, especially if it happens 2, 3, sometimes 4 games in a row. You get 5 points total, and you're like, what is going on? So it's kind of my job to keep the vibes up, because it is really important. When the vibes are low, my teammates want to quit. Sometimes I do quit. They're like, I'm not playing. This is stupid.
They just bail.
They leave.
They just mid-game? Stop.
Yeah, they just stop mid-tournament. They literally just get off.
Mid-tournament?
Like, yeah, they're just
done.
Yeah.
Right.
What is that? Like,
how does that happen?
Yeah.
It's
how does that make you feel?
Right.
I mean, I never do that. I never, ever do that, because I just find it to be really rude and disrespectful to my teammates.
Aside from that, though, I mean, how do you, it doesn't really speak to the longevity of how you might compete as a professional. Doesn't that kind of get around that maybe you have that reputation that when things get hot, you bail?
Yeah. So I'm not good enough to be a professional.
Yeah.
I'm good enough to compete with like really good players, but not like the pros are like a different level. It's almost like in baseball, you have your farm teams, but then the pros are just, they're on another level.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same concept with really anything, even YouTube, but Fortnite specifically as well. I'm pretty good. I could be on a farm team if we want to relate it to baseball.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But if I was in the pros, I would get
because you played destroyed. Baseball, right?
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
17U French national team?
I think it was 18U. But
18U.
Yes, yeah.
All right. Yeah.
So I had some cool experiences.
Is that where you think you got your competitive juices from?
Yeah.
More traditional sport play?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I played basketball. I stopped playing basketball in middle school, but I also played soccer throughout high school. And just in general, even like playing sports with my friends, whether it be football, basketball, or whatever it is, I've always wanted to win, even if it's a friendly game.
Mm-hmm.
I would never go there and be like, obviously I would never want to lose, but I always had a desire to win the game.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We've talked more and more about this cross comparison here too, of like more and more professional athletes are showing that they're gamers. Like people like LeBron James' son,
Ben Simmons.
Right? Ben Simmons. He signed FAs, right? So like, what's that like, that transition from more maybe the traditional sport to now this up and coming sport of esports?
I would say it's a lot more mentally demanding, and that comes from
esports.
Yes, and that comes from a baseball player who baseball is known to be a more mentally demanding
more
sport.
More of a focus game.
Exactly.
You know?
because I mean, there's not much physical behind it. You can be fat and be great at esports,
yeah.
Which is a pretty big.
Or you could play first base in Major League Baseball.
That's true. That's
or pitch for a long time.
That's true.
Sorry, I had to say that.
No, I mean,
for all you first basemen,
I play first base a little bit.
Who's a bit rotund.
That
in Major League Baseball,
bit,
but, yeah, but. I think I'm dating myself a little bit. They're not as quite as large as maybe they got away with back in the 80s,
right?
Yeah,
I think it is a pretty big misconception though that gamers are all fat and like out of shape because mm-hmm. it's not. I mean, yes, there are some, of course, because you don't need to be in good shape to play. But a lot of the best guys are really mentally strong, and when you're mentally strong, you want to work out and like just be great at a lot of things, including mm-hmm. having a good physique.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of like the biggest guys are actually in good shape. Mm-hmm.
Interesting that you bring up the whole idea of being in shape or the stereotype with the gamer. This was a few months back. I remember Hunter and I were just sort of thinking about how other cultures look at gaming. And I believe it's the Japanese team
right.
that put out
the, China.
Excuse me, China.
Yeah, Nike China.
Yeah, Nike China. There mm-hmm. is this wicked cool, if I lived in Boston, wicked cool ad that the Team China through Nike has put out.
Nike, by the way.
Have you seen it?
Is the no. goddess of victory. And there's like
I'm a, not.
Yeah. Yeah. And it highlights how they train. And it emphasizes nutrition. Like they replace the candy bars with the apples. It shows them training mentally, where they're all practicing like Rubik's Cubes mm-hmm. and how quickly they can do it.
Sleep recovery.
They're emphasizing sleep.
Mm-hmm. Sleeps are really important.
Yeah, right. So talk to me about that when you think about just like the stereotype of what, you know, is associated with the gamer or someone who's sitting down and doing what you do versus being a former competitive athlete in other traditional sports. What's that like? What's the most important that's other than playing the game?
Well, it is really challenging to keep a solid sleep schedule as a gamer because a lot of people who play video games are up late. It's just, I don't know, it's just a natural thing. Some people are up till 4 or 5 in the morning just playing. So it's really hard to keep a balanced sleep schedule because maybe next week you're up till 12 and you go to bed. It definitely is really challenging. I mean, some of my teammates even, I mean, I'm in college mm-hmm. and my teammates are in college. So there's a party life that they have.
Just a little.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And
keep that balance.
Yeah. Well, sometimes they go out drinking and, you know, have a,
sometimes have, it have happens.
A, yeah. You know, they have a fun night the night before. And then the next day when we have a tournament, they're completely different.
They got nothing.
Right, the next
and even though it's not, like I said, it's not really physically demanding. It's not like, oh, he can't bench more today.
Right.
But that's psychologically, though, probably why they think that they can go out and drink. Because yeah. it's mm-hmm. not as, physically hey, what do I have to do?
Exactly.
And I got to sit, yeah, I got to sit down. I got to wire in, mm-hmm. you know? Yep. What else do I have to do?
But there is a significant change in their performance right. when they don't get that proper sleep or, you know, they go
what
out.
What kind of differences do you see?
Just
because you correct me if I'm wrong, you have more of the position of like that quarterback of the team, that team leader.
Yeah. I mean, even though I make a lot of decisions, they still do make some. It's not like I say it and that's what happens 100% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to be a little bit more open-minded, I suppose, and hear what my teammates have to say before we execute a plan, which sometimes isn't a good thing because you need to make those decisions on the spot right away.
Mm-hmm.
Every millisecond counts. And sometimes you can't be like, hey, what do you think? Hey, what do you think? Let's draw up a plan and go with that because it takes too long. But sometimes we do have time and that's sort of what we do. We all say what we want to do and then we come up with the best solution.
Who's the Leroy Jenkins on your team?
Oh, Chris. My teammate Chris. Yeah, he's really... you were bringing this up earlier. I forget exactly what your point was. It was about like how... So Chris is easily our best player. One of the best players I've ever played with, no question. But he is the guy that rages off mid-tournament and like doesn't want to play if he's doing poorly. He's the most competitive person. Even if we're just 1v1ing, like just having a fun time, if I'm beating him, he gets off. He hates losing. There's no one else I've ever met that hates losing more than him.
But like I said, he's really good.
One I've always found that ever. Interesting of like the most competitive people tend to get the most angry.
Yeah.
Versus like, how do we make people who are the most competitive, most engaged?
Well, that's the thing. Like, he is so naturally talented and so good at the game that if he changed his mindset and was like, and had more of a, why am I losing? How can I improve? Mm-hmm. Let me, instead of get off, work a couple more hours, mm-hmm. study film, go back and look what I did wrong and really focus on the mistakes that he's made, I think he could be like really good, a really, really good player and make money from it.
Be more like of that money. Student of the game.
Exactly.
Right. But I think that also takes a certain level of insight. I think it takes a certain level of maturity to sit down and say, okay, why am I really playing? I mean, he's competitive and he's getting that benefit with success. But as soon as he starts to feel that control slip away, mm-hmm. then if he's choosing not to engage, then he's sort of, that's a very fixed mindset.
Yep.
Right. Was what you're talking about is more of that growth model where, hey, you know, sit back, learn, reflect.
And that's what, so one thing that's really cool about esports in general is you can get to know a lot of the professional athletes, if you want to call them that, on a personal level. And you can really, because a lot of them stream like their tournaments, you'll be able to watch them individually stream their perspective, what they're thinking, what they're saying, et cetera, et cetera. And what a lot of professional Fortnite players, but I'd imagine it goes for really any game, is that keeping a positive mentality is the most important. It's the most important thing, is to be able to control your emotions even when things are going poorly.
Right. When is it difficult to do that? Is it just like after you get killed, or is it like, is there any other time, like late game? Is late, what's like late game like, especially in Fortnite? Because I know they're building on top of each other. Yeah. You have 75 players out of 100 players within a one block square kind of.
Yeah. Well, okay. So the thing that annoys me most is when I die to a bad player, to a player that I know I am better than.
That's more insulting.
It's like, yeah. If I die to a player that absolutely dumps on me, mm-hmm. you know, he puts me in the blender. I don't know what the heck's going on. I'm dead.
Mm-hmm. Right. Respect. I'm
like, yeah, that's respect. That's what it is. That's respect. What it is. Right. That's literally what it player. Is. Yeah. I'm like, you know what? He's better than me. He just dumped on me, and I'll see me in his next montage. You know, and that I'm just like, it is what it is. I got to get better at the game. But when you have players that are not good, standing there like a drone, and then they just aimbot me because they're on controller. It's like it's the worst feeling ever. It's and that is what annoys me the most.
Mm-hmm. When you say the worst feeling ever, let's get that's
it's bad.
Okay,
so I've broken desks. I've even though I'm
but supposed this is the head game though that I want you to kind of play for just a moment for mm-hmm. us, because this is something that, you know, we've heard you talk about before, but now that you're here, what is that really about for you? Take that deep dive for me.
About what exactly?
The anger. Well, what you're feeling of having, how you've, where do you think that comes from? Like you said, with a lot of respect and admiration, really as a pro, mm-hmm. I know that you're very humble and say, you know, I'm more of a farm system guy, which I want to circle the wagon on that, because we've done talks with farm system baseball players in Major League Baseball. And I think that's very interesting that you use that analogy.
I like to call it semi-pro. If you get paid, if you win, that's semi-professional.
Right. I mean, I have been paid before from Fortnite.
Right.
Oh, so you're professional.
Right.
Yeah, but like it's minor. Like it's not even worth, like it's a hobby. It's not really any way for me to make money. But as far as
the NCAA would consider it being
that's true.
A pro.
That
right?
is, I mean, technically, I could put on my resume Fortnite professional player.
You could, technically, yeah. right? Yeah. But back to the anger, back to the emotion, you see, because it, when you go there and you're saying that you break stuff or that you lose it, you showed a lot of respect when you were talking about if there's someone who's so much better than me and they take me out, I tip my hat, respect. But if there's someone that I know is garbage that takes me out, what's the difference there for you? Why do you think that experience encourages such a dramatic reaction?
I think it's me being mad at myself because I wasn't able to beat someone that I know is better than me. And I guess something I can somewhat relate that to is baseball again. Sorry to keep relating baseball, but that's sort of my background. No,
please do. Because I think part of our, you know, experience with what we've done with you and what we want to try to help others understand is that they can learn from more of that traditional sport as they apply themselves in esports.
Well, it's like in baseball. For me personally, maybe I'm an anomaly and maybe not everyone thinks this way or a lot of people think this way, but if I were to strike out against someone who's throwing 100 miles an hour, I'd be like, like, what am I going to do? Like, that dude's a beast. Like, I can't hit that. But if someone's throwing 60 and they're like lobbing it in and I strike out, it's devastating. If you
strike out to Jamie Moyer.
It's devastating.
If you guys know
like
who he
it,
is.
Like, it hurts to strike out to someone like that.
The one who's throwing the 68 mile an hour.
I mean, they might as well
pitch.
Throw it underhand and, and you strike out.
Yeah.
That feeling is just a lot worse.
So it cuts deeper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's this really interesting concept. I'm reading a book by a samurai from like the 16th century. And it's a really interesting concept about how you face opponents. And typically you'll look at an opponent who is throwing 100 miles an hour and you're saying, oh, he's a master at his craft because he can throw 100 miles an hour. But the notion of the samurai is if you think that, you've already lost.
Yeah.
Because you don't give yourself the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And you then discredit those people who are at the throw in the 60s, if you will, because you're not putting all of your effort and energy into that person either. In a samurai duel, you're dead, you know, but in Fortnite, you're dead.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely do take the fights differently. Mm-hmm. If I see that someone isn't that good or doesn't look like that good, then I approach the fight differently. I'll be a lot more aggressive if I think the guy stinks. And in doing that, it gets myself killed a lot because I just run at him and I'm like, I'm going to destroy this guy. And then he shoots me in the head for 200 damage and I'm dead.
Right.
But if it's a good player, if it's a guy who's building a lot, doing all these crazy edits, then I play a lot more defensive, a lot more safe, and make sure that I at least elongate the fight, and which is something that I don't normally do against bad players.
It's an engaging in a focused state, right? You're using a lot of mental energy to engage against a high-level player versus like, how do I conserve myself versus someone maybe who's a little bit more less skilled. And so what's that like, the energy management throughout the game for you?
I mean, so typically you face the best players at the end of the game because the good players kill the bad players throughout the game. And then at the end, you have the 50 best players. Not only the 50 best players, but I'm not sure how familiar you are with Fortnite, but the later you go into the game, the smaller the map becomes. And so you get to a point where the map is 50 meters wide and there's 50 players within that last
forces
circle.
Everyone together.
And it's shrinking and shrinking and shrinking.
Less room to hide.
They're shrinking. Yeah, exactly. And when you're outside that circle, you die, essentially. So you have to stay inside the circle. And then when you have 50 players stacked on top of each other doing this and that, it gets insane. And knowing that there's 50 players left means that they're all probably really experienced and really good. Because to survive that long with 50 players left, you have to know what you're doing and you have to be good at the game, which is something that I think I need to improve at. Because when I get into those situations, I personally get really nervous and like anxious, I suppose. Because
it's
kind of
like the Final Four in the Hunger Games.
Yeah. Well, right. Yeah, basically. You know. Yeah. Except it's the Final 50 now.
Right. So even more so, right?
Yeah.
Because you've got so much talent.
Right. But when I'm in those situations, I feel like everyone else is better than me. And I think that's definitely a mental thing. It's on me because that's not true. They're not all better than me.
You think that's a defense mechanism? Like you're preparing yourself to, is it, you know, not to kind of crack open your noggin or anything, but you know, is it more about you protecting yourself?
No, I think it's me being not confident in my abilities, which maybe that is a defensive thing. I don't know.
Calling yourself a farm player.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose. But when it gets that late in the game, I'm a lot more hesitant to engage in a fight with somebody because I'm like, in my head, it's crunch time. Everyone that's left is good, and they're all trying to win, obviously. They're all trying to have the same exact objective as me.
You know what that makes me think of? It makes me think of, I'm a former football player. It makes me think of the philosophy that you run a particular offense the entire year with a ton of success and you work your way through the playoffs, but then it comes up to the championship game and the coaching staff decides to change their game plan because they've only got one left to win. And that's the cardinal sin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the ultimate mistake because as the adage goes, you do what you did to get there in that final game. And it just, it made me think of that when you said that, because there's now just 50 with a whole lot less room to play. So there's a part of you that maybe judges your game or yourself differently because of that special circumstance. But in any other, that thought isn't even coming into your mind. It's interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
We call it the, it's the squeeze, right? The literal squeeze of the circle, right? As well as the players, your mind is kind of becomes more rigid, right? It gets squeezed into a box, if you will.
I mean, it's just being in a much more pressured situation than the rest of the game. The rest of the game is normally pretty chill, pretty laid back. Typically, I mean, sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's go, go, go the whole time. But other times there's 10-minute spans where nothing really happens. You just rotate into zone. You do your thing. But always, the last 2 minutes of the game is always really high intensity. And it's just something I struggle with. I've asked my teammates as well because I'm always looking to improve, and I ask them what they think my biggest weakness is.
What do they say? What do they say?
Yeah, so they say that the one thing that they both said is that they feel like I sort of panic a little bit. I guess I panic a little bit in those late situations when there's 1,000 people around you and you
got. How long is that stretch of time? Like from
at
like
the end?
Yeah, how long till it like really everybody's kind of together till it ends?
So it builds up throughout the game.
Right.
But for the length, if it's a full game, you're going to the final zone and it's like the most stacked game you can get, really. I'd say like that. 10 out of 10 intensity level is probably around 3.5 to 4 minutes long.
Right. And you're talking about that most intense time, right? Yep. So the full game is what, 20 minutes?
It's around 24 minutes.
24 minutes, right? Yeah. Full game, 24 minutes. And the last 3.5 is the most important. And that's when you're most mentally fatigued because you've been doing rotations. You've been engaging with it, right? It's the last part, but you need the most energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a high pressured situation.
Yeah. For sure. And I think that's the thing that I struggle with most.
But what's so telling, though, is when you talk about the mental fatigue, as Hunter mentioned, that you're experiencing in that moment, so much of a player's performance, the systems, or should I say the skills that you're using to get you to that moment are now being stretched and even compromised the most because your mental fatigue is at its highest.
Yeah.
That's, you know, in large part what I know Hunter has worked with you on is really training in chaos. Because what you, that 4 minutes, that's your chaos.
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
Yeah, here's a video of the, kind of what that late game circle looks like. Just everybody on top of each other. What's this like watching this, this feeling?
I love it. This is what I live for. I love this stuff. And to someone who doesn't really know what's going on, they have height right now, so there's no one above them, which is the best position to be in by far.
Right. And I always find that tactical. I find that so interesting about Fortnite is, well, you can do it in some other games too, but the not just the lateral 2D motion, but the spatial awareness of height.
So if they speed. If they don't win this game, they're going to be really mad at themselves, like really, really mad, because when you have height this late in the game, they're in a really good spot. Like, they have a lot of materials. They have everything that they need to win the game here. And if they lose, they're going to be really, really upset. And it looks like they gave up height there. Not really sure how they made a cut. But, yeah, I mean, this is the stuff that I live for.
But yet it's the most pressured situation. You're most anxious.
For sure. Yeah. And one thing that I found really interesting is the Fortnite World Cup winner, Booga. He won the Fortnite World Cup, which is 2 summers ago.
2019, yeah.
I think he won $3 million or something. Something absurd. He streams a lot, so I watch a lot of his streams, and I get to know... I mean, I don't talk to him, but I get to hear what he has to say a lot. And
the same way that I get to know you.
Yeah.
By watching you and what you do, right?
Exactly.
So then when we meet, it's more familiar.
Yeah. But he said multiple times that going into that World Cup tournament, which was held in New York, I think, where all the best 100 players in the world from Australia, Europe, Asia, But everyone in the world, they just met up in, I forget where exactly, a stadium in.
It was the where the U.S. Open's held, which is Arthur Ashe Stadium.
Okay. Yeah. But he said walking into that with thousands and thousands of fans, something he's never experienced before, he made sure that he didn't let any pressure get to him. He went into that tournament having the mindset that it was any other game, mm-hmm. any other scrimmage, any other tournament that he was playing, and just didn't let the pressure get to him at all, 0%. And I'd imagine he has that same mindset going into those end games when it's really intense, so that he keeps that clear head and is able to think straight the whole time. And he dominated that entire thing. I'd imagine, like, there's other players in there that might be better than him. I would argue some are, but they might have went into that tournament very nervous because there's millions and millions of dollars on the line.
Mm-hmm. One thing to be nervous about, right?
Exactly. Payout,
money,
yeah.
Fans.
This is a little bit off topic, I guess, but I had class.
It's the head game, man. Everything's related.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I had class yesterday, and we were discussing, I don't know if you're familiar with the pasta straws and the marshmallow, and you have to stack it up. You have to put everything together and stack it up as high as possible. Exactly. Well, the average is 20 inches, but then the conductor took a group of college students and put $10,000 on the line and said, whoever stacks the highest gets $10,000. There was 10 to 15 groups. Not one group stacked anything. They were all 0 inches. Zero. They didn't get anything. And my professor was telling me that that's what happens when you put so much pressure and so much money on the line, is people fail. I guess they just fail under pressure.
Right. So what's your solution to it? Right. We do a lot. We try to find the solution. We help train people, but what's Cyrid? What is Alex DeReese's solution to that, to stay level headed? What is your process?
Well, for me, it's experience. The more I experience it, the more comfortable I am in those situations, which is why I really don't scrimmage that much. I don't practice as much as I should, admittedly. But I think that's why I'm really comfortable doing YouTube, because I've done it for years and years and years, and my experience has just developed through doing that. And so now I'm comfortable making videos with anyone. I remember at first, it's always a lot more comfortable to make a video by yourself, because it's just you. But the first time I made a video with Jack, who I was friends with at the time, but had a really big following, I was really nervous. Mm-hmm. I was really, really nervous, even though I was friends with him. But now, I've been in calls and I've recorded sections and done small collaborations here and there with really big YouTubers with no problem, zero nerves, nothing. It's just another day to me. And that's something that I don't really have with Fortnite yet. I mean, it depends on the tournament as well. If it's a tournament that there's not any money on the line, or it's not, that big of a deal, I'm a lot more calm. But when you go into these tournaments where there's going to be really high competition because there's big money on the line, that is when I get a lot more anxious and a lot more panicky, I suppose, in those end games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talk a lot about experience as being a really key determinant of people feeling more relaxed. You look at it, someone like LeBron James or now a Tom Brady again, and their poise, their ability to handle the big moment because of their experience. And we like to argue it's because of their experience they are more calm, not because of that they're calm, and that's why they can make that moment.
I mean, I'm sure you guys know a lot more than me, but I'd say it's a mix of both. I think some people just have that natural calm mindset where they don't panic in certain situations. But also, I would say that experiencing that over and over and over again helps you stay calm in those situations.
Yeah, this is very top of mind for me because just the recently, the 1 year anniversary of the passing of Kobe Bryant. And a lot of his pieces of work, his attitude, the Mamba mentality, his advice has been, recirculating, for good reason. And I saw him giving an interview when someone had asked him what was his secret and why did he feel that in that key moment, that 3 seconds left down by one, why did he want the ball? Mm-hmm. And his answer not only was simplistic, but he spoke of the very clean, straightforward idea of I always wanted to put myself in situations that I knew were stressful, and I did it thousands of times. So when that position came up, it was not really that big of a deal for me. Mm-hmm. And I find that so interesting because it speaks volumes as to there might be some people that are hardwired the way in which you say that are handling scenarios differently. Like that guy's blood pressure just never goes up, or he's always calm as ice, or what is it about her makeup that makes her so different?
Yeah.
But there's a lot of evidence behind, you know, the Mamba mentality really is work twice as hard as everyone. It's a very simple concept. When you look at how he approached being a professional basketball player, he looked at the average NBA schedule and said, I'm going to go in at 4:30 in the morning and do everyone's schedule before everyone shows up to do their schedule. So he literally said, I'm going to think about how long it takes. What are the hours required of me to become a professional? And I'm going to shorten that time by half because I'm just going to practice twice as much. So if you think about, you know, Hunter's mentioned, you know, making 300 shots. Who said that?
Ray Allen. It wasn't take 300. Don't it was take 300, being very deliberate with
right. Don't
your
take,
practice.
Make.
Yeah.
Right. And I think it's just so what is it when you hear me say that in your world, what is it about that mindset? You said that because you've been doing YouTube for a number of years, you're just more comfortable there.
Yeah.
Right.
Every video I make, I'm more proud of than the last for the most part. Sometimes I blow the video and I'm like, I don't know. But I go back and watch videos from 6 months ago and I'm like, this is not a great video. But that just shows that even though I'm growing my YouTube channel and I am making those videos to grow my YouTube channel, it still is practice every time I do it. And I tell a lot of people this all the time. I have a lot of friends that don't do YouTube but want to do YouTube. They always tell me, oh, I want to make videos. I want to do this and that. And I tell them every time, your first video is going to be bad. You're not going to make a first video that's good. And I don't know why, but everyone expects that to be the case. Everyone,
you don't know what you don't know, right?
Yeah. But everyone expects... Most people, I promise you, if you ask most people if they think that they could be a good YouTuber, the majority of them say yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes with practice. Like we've been discussing, it's not something that you can just... I mean, there's a very few amount of people that it comes naturally and they have that personality and they have whatever that it is that takes. Same thing with sports. Mm-hmm. You have those some just... natural freaks, natural athletes that are able to be better than most without much practice. But every video that I upload, like I said, even though, I mean, I guess you can relate it to playing a game of, let's say I'm a professional NBA player, but every upload is every game that I play. I'm playing it to win every time, but in every game that I play and every video that I upload, I'm growing and getting better for the next one.
Right. You're learning exponentially. Yeah. But I think that also has much to do with your mindset, is how you're approaching that, seeing that every time you do engage to play, you're playing to win, but you're still that student of self that's willing to go back and learn from each experience.
Right, because there's a ceiling to those people too who have that natural talent but aren't willing to kind of, hey, how do I get a better mic?
We see it all the time.
Talked about how do I make this better? Do I do more cuts here? Do I raise my voice inflection at this moment because that's going to kind of poise it? Am I getting feedback throughout it, or how am I playing and how am I performing as well? And there's a ceiling to just talent.
Yeah, for sure.
We work with an NFL agent who just recently I was having a conversation with, who was talking about the difference in his players who are always bigger, stronger, and faster at a much earlier age that struggle to assign mental strength work later in their career versus someone who's good, who's really had to work to get where they are. Yeah. They're like, yeah, bring it on. Like, what do you got for me? Like, feed me, feed me, feed me.
Yeah, I mean, I want to say I somewhat have that similar mentality. My YouTube channel, I know this last month has done really, really well compared to previous months, but the past 5 months in general, even if you exclude this month, have been really good months for me. And I would say about a month and a half ago, I asked my best friend Jack, who has 3 million subscribers, and his brother Adam, who's at like 80K or something. I asked them to watch 5 of my videos within the last 3 months that I've uploaded, and I asked them to make a document about everything that they would change, or everything, even if it's something as far as you're not funny enough, or change your personality. This needs to be edited differently. You should put a filter here. This, anything that they thought of, I told them to write it down.
Right.
Because it's hard, because it's an industry that is so individual, mm-hmm. and the only person that really critiques me is me. And so I wanted to get, you know, a different set of eyes on it. And I told him, like, be as brutally honest as you want, because I mean, we're best friends. I don't care what he said. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not going to take it personally. But it's a really competitive market. Mm-hmm. And even if I think my videos are the best, it doesn't matter what I think. It matters what everyone else thinks. So I'm always looking to grow.
And people are so afraid of that, to do that. And that's a testament to you, that you open yourself up to that feedback. And although they're friends, you're still taking criticism on things you've created.
Yeah.
And that's hard to do. I think a lot of people shy away from the things that make them uncomfortable, but really potentially give them the opportunities to grow.
I like to think that I'm a team player, which mm-hmm. is in Fortnite why I try to lead people or whatever. Even in that, I told you guys earlier, I asked my teammates what my weaknesses are and how they think I can improve them.
Mm-hmm.
I always try to do anything I can to win the game, especially in Fortnite specifically. Like mm-hmm. literally, if I let's say I open a chest and get the best gun in the game, I give it to my teammate who's better than me, because I know he'll use it better. So I'm not sure if that correlates directly to me wanting criticism on my YouTube channel, but I think it says something along the lines of how I personally want to do whatever I can to be better,
mm-hmm.
to be more successful, even if it's demeaning in a way.
Right. And we've talked about this as a sense of the Jordan effect, if you will. What we call the Jordan effect is when Michael Jordan finally realized that he needed other people on his team to win mm-hmm. a championship. And that's when he started winning championships. And the Jordan effect is because he's so great, and then he embraces the people around him.
Yeah.
The entire collective unit becomes even greater than what they would have been if just one individual person would be great.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't want to compare myself to Michael Jordan, because, you know, he's one of the greats, the second best ever. But,
right. But maybe. Yes. But
glad you didn't say that in the beginning.
But maybe you're talking about your teammates, too, who is very, very good. And him embracing that role a little bit too, of how do I connect more with my teammates?
Yeah.
More. How do I focus on, because I'm so skilled, talented, like, how do I focus on that mental side too, to just bring me over the edge?
Yeah.
Do you think that there's a part of you that is more open and receptive to that constructive criticism, just as far as your personality is concerned? When you kind of told that story about reaching out to friends and,
mm-hmm.
that's a mature concept.
Yeah. It's kind of funny you ask, because I'll admit,
it's what I do, man. I peer through your soul.
I don't know. It's kind of, it depends on who I ask, if I'm being honest. Sometimes my dad will give me criticism and I'm like, you have no idea. Like, I'm not listening to you. Mm-hmm. I love my dad, don't get me wrong. Great guy. Amazing.
That's a father son thing.
But like, sometimes he tells me things and like, I'm just like, I don't want to hear it. I don't know. Maybe I'm a bad son. I don't know. But when I hear it from my friends, I'm a lot more open to hearing what they really have to say.
Why?
I don't know. Maybe it's the industry. You know, my dad's not too familiar with the industry. So mm-hmm. When he tells me how to edit he doesn't. But if he were to tell me how to edit my videos differently, I'd be like, you don't really know, though. Right. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah.
I think there's a level of acceptance that maybe is easier for you to kind of digest coming from peers, yeah. people your age, people that are in the industry. It's probably a cleaner line of sight for you from what you do and their interpretation of what you do, maybe yeah. versus someone older or someone that you're related to.
I think it's just... for me personally, and maybe I should change this. Maybe it's something that I need to look into, but I think it's how much, I guess, knowledge I feel the person I'm talking to has in that industry. Because, like I said, with YouTube, when I talk to my brothers and I talk to my dad about it, I love conversing with them, don't get me wrong, but sometimes, like, they say I should do this or that, and I'm just like, I don't really agree with you, and I'm not really sure I want to listen to what you have to say. And it goes the same thing with Fortnite. Like, sometimes my brothers would be like, oh, you should do this differently. They don't even, like, really play the game. Like, they don't know what's going on. But if my teammates were to tell me to do something differently, I'd be a lot more receptive to being like, yeah, you know, you're probably... I think it's if there's someone better than me in my field and I feel like he's better than me, I'm a lot more receptive to hearing what they have to say.
I think it's important then to kind of seek out those mentors or those teammates and friends that we can connect with to open ourselves up to that criticism.
Yeah.
And I think maybe people aren't necessarily seeking those out enough of like wanting that because one, they're afraid of what those people are going to say, especially if you respect that person.
Yeah.
If I respect this person, I know this person's great in their field, and then they completely trash what I do.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be like if you were practicing basketball and Michael Jordan walks up and says, hey, tuck your elbow in a little bit more when you shoot. Or if some random stranger came up and told you to do that, you'd be a lot more
receptive
to Michael Jordan telling you that than someone else. I mean, that's just, maybe that's
right.
Not normal, but that's how I feel. Maybe that's wrong. I don't know.
But what if Michael Jordan says your shot sucks versus someone random?
I would believe him a lot more.
Okay. So you'd be more receptive to that. And I think exactly. That's a testament to you too, your personality. I think some people might be like completely head down.
No, I mean, if someone who I respect in the industry tells me what I do sucks and what I'm not good at what I'm doing, and I need to improve, I would not have a bad mentality about it at all. I'd be like, okay, let me see what I can do to work on it.
Do you think that's a process of your 8 years kind of in that content creation, or is that just something you've always had?
I don't really know. Maybe it's something that I always had. I mean, it's not that I never take advice from my dad. I do a lot, actually. Right. But when it comes to certain things, I'm less.
He loves you, Dad.
Yeah, I do. I do. I really do. But he's always been big in soccer. He's French. He was raised in France and was big in soccer. It's complicated, but he was raised
that's
in France.
Okay. Yeah, that's okay. We get it.
So I really respect his knowledge of the game. And so when I was growing up playing soccer, anything he would tell me.
Football.
Exactly. Anything he would tell me, I would do because I believed him. I guess it's just the same mentality I have now. I don't know.
Well, I think it's part of that experience too. You know, your relationship with your father. We all, you know, have relationships with parents. It sculpts us.
Yeah.
You're coming into your own. You're being acknowledged, validated by peers, by onlookers, fans. So it's more of that collective experience. So, we've been spending a lot of time talking to finding more about Alec Duris.
Yeah.
I want to know who is Cyrid. Is that your alter ego? Is that who is Cyrid? Let's talk to Cyrid. I want to talk to Cyrid.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah,
if you
give
do.
Me the Cyrid voice. No, yeah.
I guess you can call it an alter ego. I don't know if I like to call it that because it makes me sound like I'm a superhero or something, which I don't think I am. But, you know, we were touching on it earlier. Like, when you make videos, you have to be electric. You got to make the video fun. You can't just make a video and upload it and expect it not to be or and expect it to do well. And over the years of me making videos, I've developed that persona, that Cyrid person that's not, I mean, it is me, but like, it's different. I'm not walking around shouting and saying lit and and epic and wow. Oh,
you say,
my God,
you say it much
you
cooler
know?
In your videos, yeah. By the way. I'm just saying, lit.
I don't know. I think it has to do with my demographic a lot. Throughout the years, I've really understood who I'm making these videos for. And in doing that, I've developed a persona that sort of matches that audience.
How did you come into knowing your demographic? I think that's such a quick comment that we could very easily just rock it right over, but it's so incredibly important for all those people out there that might be listening to you, watching you right now. How did you get in touch with that demographic as soon as you did? And what was that process like for you?
Well, I mean, I knew going into it that making Minecraft videos, my demographic was going to be younger. There's not going to be 25 plus year olds watching Minecraft videos for the most part. But eventually I started playing on Minecraft servers, which is a public way to play with anyone. And I got to know my fans. Like, I got to go and play the game with hundreds of people that watch my videos. So in doing that, you know, I kind of got a better understanding of who exactly I'm making these videos for. And a lot of them are much younger.
Right. So in getting to know them, is that just, you know, making it clear that you want to get to know them? Is that, you know, being in their space, you know?
I mean, I can't know everyone individually.
Of course
not. There's no way to. But I've always been a big advocate for having a strong community.
Right.
And making everyone feel like that they know me personally, and that, I don't know, they can be comfortable watching my videos, I guess.
Yeah.
And everyone in the comments is friendly and on the same page. And yeah, I mean, just having a solid community. I also think that the personality that I've sort of developed for making those videos has a lot to do with Jack, who's my roommate, because I started making videos with him a long time ago, and he was already really established at that time when I had, like, I don't know, 20,000 subscribers, which is not, maybe even less.
Only 20.
Yeah, it's our goal.
Well, I might have even had less at this point. I don't know. But when I started making videos with him, he was already at 100,000 subscribers, yeah, which at the time was like,
wow. We only have 1 million plus on the head game. So, I mean, you never would have even made it in, like, in the front door.
But yeah, so making videos with him, I've always, I guess, sort of looked up to him in a way, and have always we like bounced off each other on, like, our energy level. And now we're, like, so comfortable making videos together that it's just like another day. And I think a lot of my personality comes from him when he makes, he's just like me. Like, if you talk to him off camera, very different from how he is on camera. But yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with making videos with him and just living with him, and same, and vice versa. I think a lot of his personality comes from me in videos and stuff as well. So I think it has to do with that too.
Mm-hmm. Well, we did a lot of work kind of in your space a few months back. And something that you had that I noticed was, like, Dragon Ball Z is, like, a big thing of you.
Yep.
And something that we talk about a lot is people's ceilings, people, what their perceived limits are, and breaking through those limits.
Okay. I see where you're going with
this. Right. So in terms of the space of breaking through limits, right, which Super Saiyan, right, and Super Saiyan God, all that stuff, right, what's your limit breaker? Like, where have you felt like those moments in your career have been where, or competitive, like, what are those moments where you've broken through those ceilings for yourself?
It's hard to say exactly, because I don't get super big blonde hair when I when I hit these things.
Right.
I don't get super big muscles and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
One of them definitely was that 100 days video that now has 1.3 million views.
1.3.
Yeah.
So, soon. It's
1.2.
Let's look at the current count. The current count.
Oh no. Okay. Where is it? There it is.
1.2.
1.2 and a half.
1.25. We round up.
1.25.
Yeah. God. So that was definitely one of the moments. I mean, I put so much hard work into that.
Yeah.
And to see it do so well really feels good. It feels good.
Mm-hmm.
Another moment, I mean, I guess in Fortnite, when the first earnings I made, the first check I got from Fortnite, Epic Games sending me money for placing in one of their tournaments, that was another moment where I was like, I'm decent at this. I'm actually pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess,
what are those next limits, or do you keep pushing right now where you are now? Do you keep pushing?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the sky's the limit. I don't see myself slowing down anytime soon. Mm-hmm. I know that I said earlier, I'm not super eager or nervous for my next video. I don't feel pressured at all to make another video, but that doesn't mean I'm going to stop in any way or really slow down.
some of the things that we try to teach athletes, esports, traditional, even people that we've worked with in the military, it's more about what goals do you think realistically you can achieve in the short term,
yep,
which keep you on path to your long term. What do you see some of your realistic short term as you continue to push and drive yourself, you know, hopefully through your ceiling, your perceived ceiling?
I mean, one thing that I've always struggled with is to make goals, which is important. A lot of successful people have goals in mind and they really push for those goals. I've just never really been someone too interested in goals. I don't know why. It's just never something that I've been too interested in. I've always tried to work as hard as I can, and whatever happened, happened. I don't want to say it's because I'm scared of failure, because that's probably what it seems like, is like if you don't hit your goals, you're scared of it. I think it might be maybe doubt, which maybe goes hand in hand with failure a little bit. But there's a lot of times I talk to my brothers are big fans of my YouTube channel, not the content that I make, but just the idea of me. And a lot of times they'll like project things for me. They'll be like, oh, in 2 months, you're going to have X amount of subscribers. And a lot of times I'm like, that's probably not going to happen. You're being unrealistic here. And then it happens again and again and again. It happens. And maybe that's me just being doubtful and potentially, I don't know, pessimistic a little bit. And maybe that's why I don't set goals for myself, is I don't want to not hit them. But I don't know. I don't know if that's it. I'm not sure if that's the real reason. But I've just never been too big in goals. I try to make goals for this year. At first, my goals were to hit 200K go next year. Mm-hmm. So it would be 100,000 subscribers in a year. I hit it in a month.
And check.
I tweeted out, I'm going to hit 1 million this year. That's my new goal.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a long ways away.
Right.
So now I don't know if I'm being like too ambitious. Cause what if I hit like 300K and I'm like,
So 3 million. But let's just roll with that for a second. What is it about your mindset that when you're very humble, and you know, that's a credit to you and how you were raised. Shout out to Dad. We give Dad some love.
Yeah.
And you constantly, that's not fair of me to say, in the time that we have spoken today, you pump the brakes when you're asked to talk about yourself, which I think is an asset. I think it's a strength. However, you do dream big. And when we ask you to share that dream out loud, you do articulate it. What is it about the, I don't want to really go there, you know, hold on.
So, I mean, earlier I said I never had a doubt that I would be able to do well on YouTube. Mm-hmm. That was something I said pretty early. But I'm saying I have doubts about hitting 1 million subscribers in a year. So maybe it contradicts itself a little bit. But I've never been in a rush. I think maybe it's being the youngest of two brothers, never really having too much responsibility growing up. I've just never been in a rush to get anywhere, but I've always believed that I will eventually.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's why I'm not big on goals either. I don't know. I don't know what it is, to be honest.
Well, I think it's consistent with, again, you know, there's a level of achievement that I think we all imagine ourselves that we can accomplish. And, you know, in the esports industry, the growth and, you know, the money and the fans, I think for any outsider who looks into that world, that's attractive. Yeah. And I think once you get there and once things start to happen, like that we talked earlier about, like, you know, the actor of, like, everybody says, oh, what do you want to do when you grow up? Yeah. I want to be an actor. Yeah, get out of here. You know, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
But once you get your first hit or once you get your first film, now people actually start to notice you. Talk to me a little bit about, I'm just going to use the word loosely, it's probably going to make you a little uncomfortable, your more recent fame and the attention that you've gotten because of some of the things that you've achieved. What's that been like for you?
It feels the same, to be honest. I don't feel any different. It's hard I mean, yes, I'm getting a lot more comments. I'm getting a lot more views, et cetera, but it's hard to see it. You can see the numbers going up. You can see the comments going up. But I've never really met any fans that have been like, oh my God, you're my idol.
It's Tyrant.
Yeah. My dad has had his friend's kids like FaceTime me. And they're like, oh my God, I'm such a big fan. So like, it's happened before. I've interacted with fans here and there.
Right.
But I have no, I don't want to say ego because I don't like that word at all. But I really don't have, I don't feel like I'm different to how I was. I still feel like I'm the baby in the family that gets picked on by my older brothers and, you know, gets made fun of a little bit here and there. I mean, not much has changed at all. I mean, I don't want to talk about money, but there's a lot more money coming in too. And I just don't really care about it too much. It's not like I'm like, oh, look at me now. Like there's none of that. Zero.
Right. Mm-hmm. But what I find interesting is that a lot of your mental energy goes to making sure what you don't want to be or how it's not going to bother you. And my observation of just kind of when I ask you that question is that you're still very purposeful to say, you know what, I'm not going to be that type of person. I'm not going to let success impact me in that way. There's a certain extent of discipline in that. And I think that's consistent with who you are, which probably translates to your game, your content, you know, your YouTube success.
Yeah, you know? For sure.
So you were in our lab right before we started today. So kind of talk a little bit about that experience, like being in the lab. We've done stuff at your apartment. Yeah. What's it like being in that lab, right? Our prototype lab where you get to kind of see behind of the inner workings.
It's definitely cool. I mean, mm-hmm. doing it for the second time, I felt a lot more familiar with what was going to happen. You mm-hmm. know, the first time was like, I have no idea what the heck's going on here. But the first time was a great experience. Mm-hmm. And the second time being in the lab, having all the equipment around me, it made me feel like it was, I guess, a lot more professional. It made me feel a lot more at home. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I performed any better, to be honest, but it made me want to do it more.
Right. And the experience that you'd get too, as you continue to come, is more and more chaos. You talked about experience, and only through that experience and stress and proper recovery can you really truly kind of learn how to hone your skills. And we typically preach that too with the mental side as well, mm-hmm. that you, through stress is the best way to grow, right? Through, if you're going to grow a muscle, you're going to bench press, you're going to lift, you're going to squat, that's tearing the muscle.
Right.
And then, you know, eat your, you know, drink your milk, all that stuff, yeah. protein.
Get good sleep.
Keto.
Good sleep.
Good sleep.
Right.
Don't stay up until 5 a.m.
Yeah.
If you can avoid it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I've gotten much better at it because it's been months since I did it and I've only done it once before. Mm-hmm. But I definitely think that I would improve. I don't know if, I mean, you guys have done tons of tests. Is it common for people to improve after weeks of doing it?
Actually, the response for some people can be as early as just a few sessions.
Yeah.
Because, you know, what we're stretching, you know, to Hunter's point, is the brain. We're stretching, you know, the heart as a muscle. We're stretching your muscle fibers when we're trying to encourage more of that infused, holistic performance model.
Yeah.
And the more that someone stretches, the more that someone experiences that reward, then they find that growth. And then it's like, okay, that makes sense. I want to do that again. And it's just like working out your body.
Yeah.
The more that you go to the gym, the more benefit that you get. It feeds the experience and you want to do it more.
Yeah. And so we do program mental strength training, right? Cognitive endurance training. So imagine now late game when everything is on that squeeze.
Mental fatigue is high.
Mental fatigue is at its highest. And you're also now asked to demand the most from your mind.
Right. Chaos is coming. Chaos is here.
You need to be able to have your mental treadmill, if you will.
Yeah.
To be able to sustain that.
I think having both a background in sports and esports, I would say I personally think that your mental strength is probably more important for esports. And one thing I think is really interesting on esports that I don't think many people thought about, and I actually just thought about it literally just now, is that when you're, so in real sports, when you're on the field or you're on the court, you can see your opponent. Mm-hmm. You can see how big he is, how strong he is, how fast he is. Mm-hmm. But in a game, everyone is the same character.
That's a really the same good speed. Point.
Yeah.
So it's almost like everyone's anonymous. You have no idea how good anyone is. You can't assess
their skill set. Right.
Exactly.
Or at least the eye test doesn't assist with
exactly.
that assessment.
It's really hard to. And so when you go into fights, it's like
this can be
you don't
this
know. Yeah. You have no idea how good anyone is. You can't. Yeah. You have no basis on anything.
This player
to
could
know.
Be a total beast, and I have no idea.
And so for me, a lot of times, I'm assuming that they're LeBron James. And I'm like, this guy is really good. Now I have to play scared and cautious.
Mm-hmm. Don't make a mistake.
Exactly. Because I don't know who he is.
Right.
What that's going to do to you, right? You assuming they're a master, right, puts you into a certain position as well as if
you're giving away power.
They're the noob.
Yeah. Which I think is a very big flaw in my game. Yeah.
I would assume it's a, if we're going to call it a flaw or a deficit or something that can be built upon, I would think that most people in that situation, as you have described it, would give away that power, can make the assumption that someone is much, much better than they are because of the smaller window, less room for error, more people. It's like that basic equation that you're assessing in the moment of what it is to perform, what's required, who are the variables, what's the environment, what's the interplay between me and my opponents?
Yeah.
And you're going to have a direct physiological effect because of your perception. That's inescapable. That's unavoidable. Anyone, esports, traditional athletes, all the same.
Yeah. And, you know, not knowing your opponent is always, it makes all of those variables even more of a variable. You really have no idea. And I don't know if there's any study or anything that you can do into it, but I think it is an interesting, really interesting
concept.
We're
taking your bios right now, man. You don't even know it. We got you hooked up in the seat. We're taking your heart rate, your brain.
Scared.
We're doing brainwave activity through the headphones.
I was wondering why mine's different than yours.
We got it all, dude. I'm just scrolling data right now. I mean, that's what we're streaming on the back end. You got no idea about that. So.
But yeah, I mean, not knowing your opponent at all is an interesting concept to me that I just thought of. Like, really, like, imagine a basketball game where everyone is literally the same person. How can you determine who's better and who's not? How do you defend them differently? How do you attack them differently when they all look exactly the same?
Does that mean that by default you should play and attack all the same?
I don't know. I don't know.
Hmm.
That's the thing. Like, I'm not really sure.
A big thing, too, is that anticipation. We've talked about it with, like, a linebacker. If you see the formation, you've studied your film, and the halfback or the running back's to the left, there's a four wide receiver, you know the play. It's going to be a jet sweep. But then they run, like, an inside dive on you because they called an audible. But you already jumped the gun, trying to expect one thing when the game, rather than utilizing your skills.
Yeah.
Like, understanding your ability, anticipating, and then moving and making that shift, right? So if everybody is the same in some capacity, it's knowing your ability, too, is a big part of that.
Yeah.
Trusting in yourself and your capabilities to allow yourself to take on anyone, because it doesn't matter if this is a master or a novice, I'm going to approach it relatively the same and make adjustments in that moment so I can see all versus narrow my view and only see one.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very much like the offensive coordinator in football. You made me think of an article I just read about Andy Reid and how he's really been anointed as a genius type play caller. And I kind of chuckled to myself because I was in Veterans Stadium and I was in the link from that 1999 to 2004 window where Andy was making all of his mistakes, which he's now benefiting from 15 years plus the years later.
Yeah.
But what really makes the great gameplay, game time decision caller is the ability to make it appear as if you're doing the same thing, consistent with the tendencies that the defense has studied, but then you slip in the wrinkle.
Mm-hmm.
Then you slip into something different.
Yeah.
And I have to imagine that that's how you're approaching.
Honestly, not really.
No.
Because we never.
That was such a cool analogy, though.
No, that's a great. No,
I mean, you're supposed to say yes, Dr. Lee. I mean, that's exactly
that
what
was
happens.
Amazing. That was one of the best analogies I've ever heard in my life.
All right, now continue. Great. Thank you.
in Fortnite, it's very different because you very, very, very rarely fight the same person twice. Throughout like your whole, there's millions of people that play. It's not like there's a league of 100 players and you fight them over and over and over again. So they might be able to assume your next move, your next play. So when you're fighting somebody that you've never fought before, how they can't assume your play style. They don't know. You could call a jet sweep or you could call a Hail Mary. They have no idea because they never played you before. But if they were to fight you again and again and again, they could probably read your play calls and know what you're going to do.
So this is the goal. Okay. Just like a pitcher in baseball, the pitcher's goal, and we went to the Sabre Analytics Conference and they talked about this. The pitcher's goal is to disrupt timing.
Mm-hmm.
Your job is
hitting is timing.
Right. Your job is to disrupt the player enough to give them a split second hesitation for you to then take that advantage.
Right.
Right. It's make a quick edit, edit a wall, right? Put a wall up. Right, throw a trap down if traps are still in the game, right? Or do something completely, slightly different that they wouldn't be used to, and right, that change in rhythm that they're normal.
Are
used to.
I mean, as a fight develops, each individual fight's very, very different from another. I feel like it's not even comparable to how each at bat is different from the other. Like really, every fight it's very different. The approach is different. Someone could have height, you're lower. You're to the left, you're to the right. And throughout a fight could last 10 seconds, it could last 3 minutes of a single fight. But throughout that span, you're always trying to change the pace, change what you do. Maybe you edit something once, you shoot them. The next time you edit it, you reset it right away and like fake them out. There's so many mind games in Fortnite and really any esports, but the mind games are on another level. Mm-hmm. It's pretty crazy. It's hard to see when you don't play the game and you're not too familiar with every little thing. Like a lot of my viewers tell me that they don't know what's happening. Like they'll watch me play and they're like, I don't even know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Just because there's so Fortnite, the reason I like Fortnite so much is because all the different aspects. No other game in the history of gaming has ever had as much of a skill gap. I don't know if it's not really used too much in regular sports, but in esports, there's a big term called the skill gap in a game, which is basically how good you can get at that video game. And in Fortnite, so let's say you have two games. You have CSGO, really big game.
Yep.
This is the bottom of the bar. We'll go this way to the skill gap. In CSGO, the skill gap's like here. The best players, the best you can possibly get is this point here. But in Fortnite, it's probably double or even triple how good you can get in Fortnite. The players who play CSGO for the first 3 weeks, they won't be able to compete with the pros, obviously. But, you know, they might kill them once, twice, maybe. In Fortnite, Fortnite's been out for, I think, over 3 years now. And the best players are still getting so much better. And in a year from now, they're probably going to look back at their gameplay from a year ago and be like, I was bad. I was not good then. But in CSGO, in a year from now, those players who look back, yeah, they might say they've improved a little bit. But overall, they're going to be in a very similar spot.
So the skill gap is really a higher ceiling.
Yeah, it's literally how good you can possibly get at the game. Which I guess I think is different to sports because there really is no...
I mean, talk to Tom Brady.
Well, no, that's the gap, right?
Right, right.
It's the physical ability. There's certain thresholds, but, right? You can get faster to a point, but you're not going to run 24 miles
exactly.
an hour every
You're not going to keep getting faster. How fast you can get.
But your mind is something that always develops and always changes. And there's more research that shows that it actually grows throughout age. It slows down, but you can actually sustain that growth period with, again, neuroplasticity changing.
There's also the collective gap, too. I mean, you might not continue to get faster if you max out at 24 miles an hour as a wide receiver, but you can develop other aspects of your game then comprehensively or holistically are allowing you to get better as a football player, more valuable to that team, to that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I agree. It is... You can only get so good physically, but the mental is probably where you can continue to grow.
Well, they're looking to max, and they've spent so much time on the physical. Yeah. And maybe they haven't hit their ceiling yet, and there's still more to go because people are doing amazing feats physically as well. But you can really bridge that gap, and you can jump exponentially with the mind, because that's not something that people are actively training, consistent training, right? People are doing mental skills, people are doing mindfulness, people are doing meditation, sit down, calm, quiet space, but they're not actively training to challenge my mind to think about doing things in a different way.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing that the whole building aspect of Fortnite has changed. Every 6 months, there's something new. The game doesn't change. The game is the same. But players find new ways to outplay their opponents. And when you look at like the first year of Fortnite, if you could put two ramps down next to each other, what's called double ramping, you were the best.
Mm.
You were so good. Oh, a double ramp. That guy's the best. It's a joke. Double ramping is like, well, it's been years since then. And the techniques that have been developed over the years are just so absurd. Right now, the big thing, because there's always a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the next thing is going to be, but right now the big thing is pre-boxing people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you're too familiar with Fortnite, but it's basically...
I'm a quick learner. Go ahead, hit me.
So in Fortnite, there's a phrase that we say, box like fish. And what that means is when you build around a player and put him in a box. So he's stuck in your box. He's like trapped in there. He has to break out of it. And a lot of times you box people like a fish, but you're also in that box. But now the big thing is that you pre-box. So what that means is you put a box in a certain spot really quick. It's so hard to do. You put a box somewhere and you do that before the opponent even moves into that box, because you anticipate what he's going to do next. So let's say, so someone's in a box here by himself. It's his box. You take this wall, and because you have this wall, the guy in the box, he's panicking now. He's like, oh my God, he has my wall. I have to get out.
Right, I'm trapped.
And so the guy, yeah. And so this guy that's outside of his wall will put a box here to his left, and this guy will run out into that box.
A box to a box.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Thinking he has walls.
Thinking he can go in there and take those walls and et cetera. But now he's stuck like a chicken in a trap. And I'm not even good enough to... I've done it a couple of times, but it's really a really advanced technique. Mm. And it's just really interesting to see how the game continues to develop. And I don't know what the next thing is going to be, but I'm sure it's going to be... It just gets crazier and crazier.
Do you get excited when you actually think about that, as far as, you know, we keep talking about the ceiling of esports. It just seems limitless.
I mean, it's definitely exciting. I'm eager to see where Fortnite goes in the future. I don't see myself ever being a professional Fortnite player, because to do that, you have to put 10 hours a day into the game.
And I think if a new game came out, that might be something that you would do.
I've thought of it. I was actually thinking about this last night. One thing that I truly, truly love is competing in... I mean, I guess just competing in general. And I don't feel like I get that... yes, YouTube is very... It's very competition heavy. But when I'm not battling directly against someone else. It's not like I beat you. It's not like a wrestling match or a Fortnite match where I beat you individually. And that's something that I really love to do. I love competing directly with somebody else. And so I was thinking, I was like, what really makes me happy? And that is to compete like that. I love Fortnite tournaments. It is, even if I do poorly in it, I tell my teammates, like, even though the vibes are low, I'm like, I had a great time.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we didn't do well, we underperformed, I had a great time. And right now, I just don't have the time to put 10, 12 hours a day into something like that. But if I'm able to establish myself in other industries and make a comfortable living, bless you.
Thank you.
Maybe then I'll move away from that content creation and being an influencer and really focus on something that I really love to do in competing in esports.
Awesome.
So a question I just have to ask is, where do you see esports headed? going.
I don't see it stopping anytime soon.
Yeah.
I mean, there have been games out for like 10 years now. Like League of Legends, I think it's around 10 years old. And it's still pulling millions and millions and millions and millions of views. I'm not too familiar with that esport. I've never played it. I just know it's massive. And Dota 2 as well. Really big in like Japan and China. But also very big here. But the numbers that they're putting up is comparable to like Super Bowls here. And it's only
greater.
Mm-hmm. And it's only growing. Like the industry, it's insane how big the industry is going. And it's becoming a lot more mainstream. I've seen esports on TV before. I see it on like Instagram. I see SportsCenter tweeting out clips of esport plays. And to me, it's like it's like really heartwarming knowing that bigger corporations and industries are taking it seriously. And
oh, they're taking it seriously. They're paying attention.
Yeah.
If you think about it, it's really the only global sport that everyone is playing to some degree.
Aside from soccer.
Well, but yeah, yes, that's true. But if you think about again, I don't know the statistics on this, just the level of enthusiasm of soccer in the States and football to the rest of the world is uniquely different.
Yeah.
Right?
Definitely.
When you hear of those stories of how people respond to what we call soccer in the rest of the world as to what it appears to look like here, I think it's different.
I think that's going to happen in esports as well. Like I said, Dota and League of Legends is really big in Asia. Here, the biggest esports, I mean, it might be League of Legends here too, but Fortnite's really, really big in America and in Europe. The only way that you can compete, like, and someone from America can compete against someone in Asia is if they fly out and compete there because of ping and internet, because there's going to be a lot of latency and lag. So I think because of that, because they can't really compete against each other unless they're actually together, that might separate what esports are bigger in different regions of the world.
All right.
Nice. Alec DeReese, a.k.a. Cyrid.
Thanks for coming on.
Bro. Yeah, thank you guys for having
me. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
For Dr. Hunter Stevens, my name is Dr. Lee Piccarello. Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of The Head Game, and we will catch you again real soon.
All right, so the first question is, I think this was from Tiny T in a Box.
Oh.
No? Okay, no, this is from a different user. How can you do psychological training for sprinting? Not any particular sport, but sprinting. So I guess running, sprinting, or?
Yeah, the track and field.
Yeah.
I'll go first. when you think about mental skills training in general, the concept of training, we've actually have worked with college athletes who have come to us specifically to knock, you know, a couple of tenths of a second off of their 40-yard dash in the combine, the NFL combine, that is. So it's very high pressure. Pretty much the difference in someone's 40-yard dash can determine where they go in the draft, the first round versus a third round, if you're a wide receiver or a defensive back. So really, for me, the perspective that I've taken with these types of athletes, which I'm going to make the 40 analogous to a sprinter, thank you, is really about the focus off the line. And it's the emotional management that you have of your physiological systems, specifically heart rate and respiration, in anticipation of you trying to start. So there's these mental scripts that you can develop and infuse into your pre-practice routines that through lots of repetitions, you then implement into how you approach the line to get your mind and your body fully engaged to make that best run of your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a mindful athlete is a mindful athlete of all senses. And so you're there's a large element of synchronicity to the start, to the movement in your arms and your legs. And so it's really a neurological thing as well as a physical thing. So training the mind, which is one of the key centers as well as the spine of your neurons firing, it's important to train those things. So a good psychological tactic is making sure that you're aligning yourself, getting good sleep, taking care of your overall wellness, But when your mind is healthy as well, your body is going to answer to the call much more easily. And so mental preparation is a key element, as well as knowing your ability. As we were talking about with gaming, understanding that your sprint is only a certain amount of time, locking in for that amount of time, using that energy in that amount of time, be explosive with your mind surging and giving yourself the mental strength and endurance to do so.
All right.
Great question.
The second question.
Thanks for the question.
Second question is, can you do biofeedback live with a host?
Oh, we can
like,
do.
Yeah.
I mean, we could do. Ask Alec. Alec, what was it like when we were on site with you in your apartment doing a little bit of biofeedback?
It was really cool. First of all, it was a really cool experience. I've never had anyone track my heart rate, my motion, all that. I don't even like. There was a lot of stuff that was going on, and it was really cool. It was awesome to see. Like, and I was actually really surprised at how accurate it was. Like, I remember there was one time you had me hooked up and you were like, remember a time that you lost in a tournament and you weren't feeling good. The second I did that, I saw, and I didn't think it would work this way. I was like, there's no way, like, no this way. Technology works like
no
this.
No way.
I'm being 100%, like, it was the craziest thing. It was like my bar went from here to happiness to like way down here in like half a second just by thinking that sort of thought. And being able to use that technology live as I was playing Fortnite was really unique. Like, I would see it on my other monitor. Like, if I got sniped or something to the body and I was still alive, but I was just in a really bad situation, I could see the immediate reaction that was going through my head. But it's different to be able to think something and then actually see what you're thinking. Or like see your emotion is
see what
is
your
really
emotion
cool.
looks like.
Yeah.
Right. Or how it translates into numbers too. Also, if you go to our YouTube channel, there's a video where we highlight Alec and he's doing some training in his home where you can see some of those differences. It's very portable. It gets hooked up to an earlobe in your shirt.
Yeah, that's the Mindful Athlete Training YouTube video.
Right. As well as you can download it to a tablet or your phone. So it's very user-friendly. It's very convenient, and we provide all of that here.
Cool. Awesome. And then the last question was, then explain how these types of exercises can build one's mental strength.
Oh, Dr. Stevens.
Yeah.
Would you like to take the mental strength question?
Yeah, so for any strength, you need some type of resistance, and for any growth, you need some type of recovery. So what we utilize is a natural system in the body called neuroplasticity. That means your brain, when you woke up this morning and you go to bed, is a little bit different because it's either strengthening certain pathways or inhibiting certain pathways that you don't need. You don't need to remember what you ate for breakfast 6 Thursdays ago. So your brain is ever changing, and leveraging these neuropathways or neuroplasticity is the best way to do it. So what we'll do is we actively put people under pressure, under strain, thinking about trying to do two things at once. You know, brushing your teeth and rubbing your head is kind of similar to that, but we do it in a much more intensive way, and we slowly stimulate the senses more and more. So imagine trying to juggle while balancing, while maintaining timing, doing math problems. Like, that's what it kind of looks like. We're doing it in a different way, a much more active way, but that's putting some resistance and strain on your brain. And then we bring that athlete back to recovery, utilizing different systems, different meditations, visualizations that are traditionally used, but we're using them in a more active capacity. So when people need them, they can rely on them. It doesn't have to be in a calm state. It could be in the moment, in performance.
All right. Thanks for the question.